Welcome to The Parent Equation with me, Aisha Murray, the podcast series where working parents share their unique stories of raising a family alongside their careers. The conversations I'm privileged to have are inspiring, uplifting, emotive, and most of all, honest. So I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoy recording them. So today on The Parent Equation, I'm joined by the lovely Rachel Schofield. Rachel is a former BBC journalist and now fellow career coach. And we've had the pleasure of meeting in person, which in this bizarre day and age sounds quite strange, but we have met in person. So welcome, Rachel.
Thank you. I like being described as lovely, Aisha. Oh.
You are. So Rachel, the first question is, you had a very long and successful career with the BBC as a journalist. What led you to, I suppose, retrain as a coach in the first place, start your own business, support women, which is what you do in your career coaching? What was the kind of catalyst for that, do you think?
It's funny. I think often you reflect back on it and you can see more clearly, can't you, afterwards? And I think I often say as the quick answer, it was Brexit. But in a totally different way. I think what happened, well, I'd worked at the BBC, as you say, for over 20 years. So I started my career in local radio, local TV up in Newcastle, moved to Radio 4 down in London, and then spent a good sort of 15 years or so on the BBC News Channel, presenting rolling news. There were lots of things I loved about it. And I'd always, for a long time, wanted to be a journalist. So in some ways, it was my dream job. And the BBC as an organisation felt like a really special place to work. But I think with any jobs that on the outside look terribly glamorous or interesting to other people, all jobs after a while become a little repetitive, don't they? And I think what happened for me particularly is Brexit came along. And so for a good 18 months or so, I felt like I was having conversations, mostly with politicians, but also with business leaders and members of civil society and union leaders. I was having the same conversation, Aisha, with people day in, day out, on the air. And most of the time with people, particularly the politicians, who didn't really want to answer my questions. So regardless what I asked, they would give me the same shtick. Of like, either this is going to be fantastic or this is a disaster. And I just felt like I was going around in circles. And I think what I realized is I loved a lot of what I was doing in terms of asking questions and listening and analyzing. But I never really liked the combative space of journalism. The idea that, particularly with politicians, you were having a conversation that felt like you weren't trying to get to the same place together, understandably, because you wanted to challenge and you wanted to get to the truth. And I liked all those things, but the process became frustrating because I thought, what's the point of me asking these questions when I know what answer I'm going to get? I'm going to get it all spun and the party line, whatever. So I think it was that made me think there's lots of bits I like, questioning, listening, analysing, digging around for the truth, but I don't want to do it in this space anymore. And I think that's what, in a roundabout way, led me to coaching, because a lot of the skill set was the same, but it was collaborative. It was working and asking questions of people who were keen to speak openly, dig into their own truth and work out what they wanted from life, and were going to be authentic and open with me in a way that a lot of people you interview as a journalist just aren't in a position to be.
And the outcome for you, I presume, and again, knowing this from coaching, the outcome of coaching is potentially transforming someone's life in a hugely positive way. Where I guess what you're saying on the journalism side, especially the Brexit years, is the outcome of those conversations wasn't quite that.
Yeah, a really good observation, absolutely, that you want to sort of see a direct result. I think in journalism, sometimes you feel like you're doing a good job asking the questions and raising important issues, but you know that in real terms, the power is elsewhere to effect any change, and that things are often very, very long term. Whereas with coaching, you're right. You think if we work together, myself and the client, the coachee, we can really achieve something. We can bring about the change that this person wants rather than just talking around the edges and seeing nothing move. The dial never shifts. So that was much more exciting to think we can do something here, something important and special to this individual, rather than battling with the kind of behemoth of British politics.
And your daughters, who are in their teens now, and this is maybe an ignorant question, I perceive journalism to be a pretty full-on career choice, as in, you know, especially
actually on TV and in radio. How did that work alongside having, I suppose, in those days, younger children?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think it really depends where you are within the world of journalism. Mm-hmm. And so when you're a reporter, if you're sort of Chris Mason, the BBC's political mm-hmm. editor, you are just, you know, the people who never sleep. I mean, yeah, Laura Koonberg, the former BBC editor, described as the woman who never sleeps. Yeah. You hear her on the Today programme, she's still going on the 10 o'clock news. Mm-hmm. I think probably it's what led me over time to make a shift. So I started as a reporter, where, of course, you start each day, you don't know quite what the story will be. When it's apparent what the big story of the day is, you're sent out, you don't know how long you're going to be out for. You might be required to do lives, and then you're sent somewhere different to follow the story. And it's very unpredictable. And I think it's probably what led me, as well as based on my own skill set and what I enjoyed, to move into presenting. So what was actually joyful about being a presenter on the news channel is it's essentially shift work.
Right. Okay.
You know, you go in, you're on air at a certain time, you come off air at a certain time. Of course, there's some prep work before you go on. But you know that when you clock off, you know, unless something really has gone awry, you're going to finish, you can go home, and there's no take-home work either, which is a big contrast to a lot of jobs where you go home, there's still emails coming in and a report to write. So, I was mindful of that, and I think part of the reason that through my career I moved into presenting and studio-based work rather than being on the road was as a result of becoming a mum. And at one point I thought, wouldn't it be exciting to be a foreign correspondent? And I think that's very doable. And there are some fantastic women out there, Lise Doucette, Orla Gearin, people like that, who are doing that. But I think that is more challenging to balance with family.
Well, it seems to be from outside, you know, looking from the outside in, it appears that they're always on telly.
Yes.
Day in, day out, night and day.
And the birth, of course, the 24-hour news cycle. Back in the day, it was, you know, you go out, you gather all of the news you need to create a masterpiece for the 6 o'clock news and the 10 o'clock news. Of course, now you're doing that alongside where I worked, the BBC News Channel ringing you and saying, right, we need you on air for a quick hit at the top of the 2 o'clock news. And can you then come back at 3:30? And, you know, it's constant. Which is exciting because you get to follow an evolving story, but of course it's really intense.
I can imagine. And with that reporter sort of reporting in mind rather than journalism broadly, I was, as you know, at the House of Commons yesterday chairing a panel discussion, and there's a very valid question from someone in the NHS who said things like remote working, working from home, hybrid flexibility, etc. is all very well if you are in an office kind of environment and you can work from home with a screen. If you're a standing up job, I think they might have used better wording than that, a standing up job like nurse, retail worker, millions, anything custom facing in the public, train driver, you know, you can't work from home. It's not a job that can be done from home. Same for reporting. You need to go and report. You need to go and report from wherever the event is taking place, not from behind your desk. So how does that work? Again, it was about childcare. We were talking specifically around childcare. How does that work when you are out on the road and you've got to go at the drop of a hat to wherever you have to go, and you've got kids at home, maybe sick kids, suddenly the nursery calls and says you need to come pick your child up? How does that work when you're in a job like reporting?
I suspect, and as someone who's been out of that loop for a while, it probably doesn't. I think it's really challenging. I mean, to some extent, technology, you know, if you're a presenter, we saw through COVID some presenters, my husband works at BBC Radio 2, some presenters were able to work from home and could set up studios, of course. But you're right, if you're the reporter, you need to be where the story is and you need to follow it as it evolves. And of course, stories don't adhere to strict timetables and stories don't clock off at 5 o'clock when you need to get to nursery. So I think it's very challenging. And I do worry that as a result, probably, I haven't done the stats, but that a lot of the people we see on our screen reporting are men who are in the field, and that it is a harder, more challenging job for women. And I'm generalising, I know, but I think probably the women who are reporting day to day and are at the beck and call of the news agenda will have to have worked extra hard to think about how they can be flexible, how they can work with their partner to deal with those unforeseen circumstances. And I'm not sure what the answer is. Regardless of gender, I think there are certain professions which just, you know, juggling with a family is hard. And that's not to say people shouldn't do it, but I suspect as well, it would be interesting to look at this, that obviously there are people who are what we call airside,
Yeah.
So people who are out reporting, and there are presenters and there are producers, and producers are very much based in the newsroom, on the phone, and through COVID at the BBC, most of them were working from home.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, that sort of work can be done. The hours are still can be tricky, but they're shifts normally, which works, but can be done from home. But I think, yes, reporting is a tough job and requires quite a juggle.
And quite obviously a massive commitment. And one of the stats yesterday that brought up by Jolie Brearley was that there is an increasing number of women leaving the workforce because of childcare issues, costs, support. So I didn't have mum and dad in London, but they're too far away to have been on call. So when I was in my normal corporate work, I'd have to drop everything if the kids were sick and jump on the train home, or my husband have to jump on the train home. So women are deciding just to leave work entirely because it's easier and cheaper to do that than to pay for childcare costs. So then, to your point about the sort of journalism reporting aspect, you're going to get less potentially in that arena, have to do some digging around stats and things, maybe less women reporters on site because of, you know, the childcare costs spiraling and childcare issues in general.
Yeah, and I think it's a concern, isn't it? Because, of course, what we want is different perspectives in news and people coming with different eyes and different kinds of life experiences. And then there's a wealth, a richness in that, which we risk losing if everybody becomes people, you know, who don't have children or who are the main breadwinner, which often is the man, but still, you know, and then women fall out of that. And again, you know, with journalism in particular, of course, even if you could afford the childcare, because the hours are so odd and you might suddenly unpredictably need to sort of work on a story till 9 o'clock where you thought you'd probably be done by 4:30. It's that wraparound. It's the odd hours where, you know, there are no nurseries that open their doors at 5 a.m. when you need to start your early shift. Whether we go down that line, I mean, yeah, it would be a big ask, wouldn't it, for people who work in nurseries and childcare. But I think, yes, again, it's a thought that people then have to have a budget maybe that can stretch to a more bespoke kind of childcare with a nanny or a particular childminder, and then you're into a whole other budget. So it's really tricky.
Yeah, and it's all about personal choice. I mean, obviously, you can absolutely choose to have a nanny, and you can make your job work for you. There are ways of making it work. I think it's just when it comes to the costs involved that's when it starts to become prohibitive.
Yes, absolutely. And so many people are sitting doing the maths and thinking, well, in order to do that, I barely break even, or I work at a loss. And some people obviously choose to do that because work is not just about money, is it? It's about fulfillment and identity and achievement and satisfaction. But it's a hard equation, as the parent equation is in the title of your brilliant podcast. Yeah. It's a hard one to sit and try and balance when X doesn't really equal Y.
No, it doesn't. And we need to be happy parents, happy, balanced, stable parents to produce happy, balanced, stable children. So it's vitally important that we look after ourselves and have something that works for us and the family so that we can sort of pass that through the kids and the family sort of dynamics.
Yes, and I think I work, you know, the space that I coach in now is a lot with women returners, so mums who have stepped out of the workplace. And they, as you say, people feel forced to make that decision. Sometimes there's an element of choice. It's very personal. It depends on so many factors. But what I do see is a lot of the women, whether they've done that as a choice or whether that's been slightly imposed upon them because of their job, when they come to work with me as a career coach, they've spent some time out of the formal workplace. And they feel very grateful that they've had time with their children, but they also feel perhaps a slight loss of self and that they have given up something that gave them that enjoyment and that extra dimension to their life and a chance to really live out the fullness of who they are and express that professionally as well as a parent. And I think people often struggle when they end up in that space because they feel slightly lesser and that they've missed out on something. And it's really tricky because they would probably never say they haven't loved the time with the children. And in many ways, that's been a privilege. But it's a real challenge.
And do you find with those women in particular, do you find that when they come back from whatever period of leave they've been on, it varies obviously, do they find it hard to go back into the career they had before because they have, maybe it's perception, but they feel like they've missed out on a period of time? Or do you get people actually changing their career, but like we did, because actually that feels like the best option all round?
Yeah, really good question. I think the people who come and work with me generally are looking for something different.
Okay.
The motivation for that, I suspect, is contained in that sort of muddle in the middle that you expressed there, that some of them think, oh gosh, it's so long since I worked in PR or since I was a lawyer that I will struggle to get back in. Some of that, and I, of course, if they're thinking that, but they want to get back in, then my first question is always, well, let's look at the evidence for that. Is that something that you're thinking and that your mind chatter is giving you, or is that something that's proven?
Yeah.
And I think it is challenging. We've seen LinkedIn now give you the option to put career break in your work history and things, but it is still scary for a lot of people to say I've been out of formal work for 5, 10, 7, 11 years. So it makes people wobbly. And I think sometimes they think I can't get back in.
Yep.
But there are great returnship programs and there are definitely ways to go about that. So I would never want someone to let that stop them. Mm-hmm. But actually, what I also see, as you alluded to, is women who are coming up for air, who are like, oh, my children are a bit bigger. Mm-hmm. This is a new chapter. And that newness is exciting to them as well. They think, well, maybe I don't want to go back into HR. Maybe I don't want to be an accountant or an IT specialist anymore. Maybe I can do something a bit different with my skills. And I guess what often shifts is people's values, isn't it? I think the career that they stepped into in their 20s was perhaps driven just by the A-levels they'd done or the degree they'd done or what their parents thought they ought to do. And, so, and suddenly when you get to reassess that in your 40s or 50s, you perhaps think, hang on, that's not what work is about for me now. Yeah. It's about, you know, impact, or it's about contribution or service or performer, you know, all sorts of things that you want to explore with people. And that takes people down some interesting pathways, or they've developed an interest that they think, could I do something with this thing that really brings me alive, that's a bit different to what I used to do? And that's a fun space to explore with
it people. It's that could I, would this, is this possible? And of course, anything's possible. As coaches are going to say, anything is possible. But it's that excitement about, what could I make? This could be something amazing. This could be, you know, it could be, and maybe is going to be life-changing. And actually, to that point, I absolutely fell into my career. And you all know where this place is. I started after university, not knowing what I was going to do, stuffing envelopes at BSI at the end of Chiswick High Road. In the marketing
department. Want to become
department.
A professional envelope stuffer?
No, I did not. And it happened to be in the marketing department of BSI, through, you know, one of the old school temp agencies we used to have on the high street. They're there anymore. So I was just in the whatever floor I was on, of that big long building at the end of Chiswick High Road, doing some admin. And they just said, oh, do you want a marketing exec job? At some point, yeah, all right.
That was fascinating. Yes,
and that was it.
Twists and turns lead us to where we are, and it's often not until we have an enforced stop, and for a lot of women it is motherhood or returning to work, that you get a moment to think, how did I quite end up here? It was not deliberate. You know, we always think we have a career path, but there are actually so many random things that occur that have led us to where we are, whether that's a teacher saying, oh, you're terribly good at maths, why don't you go and be an accountant? Or your parent going, well, you'll never really be an artist, dear, so you better go and do this instead. Yeah. Or as you say, just a random encounter or someone saying, oh, you're good at this, come and join our department. Yeah. And of course, it's exciting sometimes to be given those opportunities, but it's also valuable for us to step back and go, is this still what I want? Is this what I really ever wanted? Or are there bits of me that are champing at the bit to be heard and let loose?
But I think actually it's a very good point that why should we leave it till motherhood or till a life of mass, you know, big life event to reflect on where our path is going, career path? We surely, if I had done that in my late 20s, early 30s, and reflected on it then, I would have probably come to the same conclusion, do something different. But you just don't. You kind of carry on. You need to earn money, and obviously, you know, you have freedom and all that kind of thing. So you want to earn money and do all these exciting things. But actually, I think even the younger generations should be stopping, and maybe they are more these days, and reflecting on, actually, is this what I really want to do? Is this what aligns to my values? Or did I just sort of fall into something that maybe I shouldn't be continuing long term? That seems to take a big life event to stop us and make us think.
Yes, absolutely. You see it, don't you? People after a divorce or a bereavement or having children or whatever it is, that's a moment where the earth underneath you moves in some way and it causes you to look around you more widely. But I know that when I got to, I think I'm 46, and I think when I hit 40, I got a reminder from my doctor saying you're entitled to an NHS health care. Did you get that?
I've had two now.
Yeah, me too. You can get your cholesterol done, and weigh you, and ask you how much you drink and do you smoke. And I, you sort of, we almost need that, don't we, professionally, that every, I don't know, 5 years, you get a conversation where you sort of lay it all bare and get on the scales and say, do you still weigh enough to be a graphic designer, or do you, you know, could it be something else? Yeah. But there's very rarely that opportunity. And listening to, I listen to you, like you, I'm sure, to a lot of interesting podcasts about the world of work. And you sort of think the best HR departments probably ought to be doing that. I was listening to a podcast by the Harvard Business Review about women at work, and they were talking about how you retain talent. And of course, one of the things is keeping that conversation open and every so often checking on the people who work for you and saying, what is it you want in 5 years' time? Because, of course, if you find out that from them, then you're more likely to help them stay, because you can help them forge the right career path for them. And if they say, well, actually, I quite fancy a change into a different department, or like, but I'm not sure how many organizations have the time, the budget, the inclination to do that. And so it means most of us plod along feeling a little bit unnoticed and unheard, and thinking, oh, well, I'm not even sure where I'd start, but I know something's wrong, or I know I'm a bit bored, or but how do I make space to explore that sensation?
Yeah, I have come across one company, actually my husband's company, new company, who, when they look at your career path and what you want, where you want to get to, what you want to achieve, they actually look beyond the company. So they say, we completely understand that you may not want to be with us for the rest of your life. So where do you want to go? You know, and don't be confined by these four walls. We'll help you get to where you want to go. And don't worry about offending us. I'm not going to be offended if you want to say you want to leave in 5 years. I know. That's very forward thinking.
That is. And that made me think of something I'd listened to recently. There's a foundation that works as part of ADECO. You can look, I want to say the Innovation Foundation, and I'm not sure that's right, but they're looking at the world of work and the future of work. And one of the people who speaks to them was talking about exactly that, that the best employers want to train their workers and really allow them to play to all their talents, because that is a contribution to society. They might go on to leave you, but you've built them up, you've given them skill set, and you know, let them go with goodwill to make a further contribution. But I thought, gosh, that takes a leap for an employer to think in that quite selfless way.
Well, it is.
It's my job to just help this person be their best self and then go off to somebody else. Because you'd be thinking, darn, we invested a lot of money training that person. So it's a big ask, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we could see that, and the fact that that's happening?
Yeah, it's happening. And also, they also support everybody and encourage everybody to do something extracurricular. So he's doing a master's, his second master's, with an academic. And they said, that's absolutely great. And if you want to work 4 days a week so you can do your master's on the fifth day, then that's fine.
Well, I'm not doing it yet. The enlightened thinking is great.
I guess, of course,
people sometimes then come back round, don't they? There's a joke, I think, in the BBC that people obviously, it's the same for everywhere, that in order to get higher up in the BBC, you probably need to go and do a spell at Sky News or ITN.
Yep.
But you probably might well come back round. So
it cuts
the same way in lots of organisations.
And if you leave on good terms, if you leave because you've been developed and nurtured and you leave on good terms, then A, yes, you might come back round, but B, you will recommend that company to other people. So the brand, you know, the brand profile of that company goes up. They start getting in good talent because good people are referring good people. So surely, again, with that enlightened broad thinking, seeing, you know, a bit the bigger picture, I suppose, of what they could be doing, this, it's hopefully the beginning of many more companies doing it. So then back to your motherhood and parenting, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got older daughters. So I'm going to look at you for any advice, because my daughters are still younger, so vaguely manageable. as they are now leaving school shortly and sort of going on to their own path, do you think they're going to look back, or do you like them to look back at you and your long career and then your career change? Do you think that's going to influence the way they where they go, the direction they take?
What a lovely question. Yeah, I hope within what they've seen with myself and their dad, my husband, yeah, they will have a sense of possibility, I would hope. My husband loves his job and always has done. As I say, he's at the BBC. And that's a great thing to see someone who thrives, even though he works silly, you know, he's up at 4:30 every morning to do an early show in the mornings. So that's somebody who's loving their job, which is exciting. And I hope that as I've got daughters, so that what they see with me is that we can have careers that move with us. And, you know, that's not to say it's easy, but I hope that they will see that you don't have to be on that linear path anymore, that you can start in one place and you can move and you can adapt what you want to do. And I think increasingly that's their expectation, that generation, isn't it? That there's not a pathway that one has to walk on and that you're wedded to it forever, having made a decision at the age of 18. That we can detour, that there are creative opportunities to go and work in different ways and then take another diversion. And that, whereas in our generation growing up, that would sort of be frowned on, wouldn't it? The sort of, you're a bit flaky. What do you want to do? Hang on, I thought you were a teacher. Why do you now want to be a web designer? Whereas now I think people are much more holistic about their career and see that it's about taking their skills in all sorts of directions and that they can be playful with that. I hope that's what I would like them to see, and what I try and communicate to them through my work as a career coach, that you are you're not a job, you're just a person with a set of interests and strengths and skills and desires, and how you package that and keep repackaging that is hopefully very much up for grabs, and you can evolve the whole time. You don't get stuck in one job, which ends up with a sort of carriage clock and a handshake.
Might be a bit inspired to have one of those carriage clocks. Very, very vintage, trendy thing to have now on your mantelpiece.
Yes, I would quite like a sort of cut glass decanter. Yeah. I don't know what you're meant to put in decanters, but we're missing out, Aisha.
I know we are. And then presumably your kids, well, not presumably, is university still a thing? As in, because obviously now there are so many options, there are vocational options, there are apprenticeships, there is, again, maybe more choice than maybe we had when we left school. Is that something that feels like there's more choice there, or is there still quite a linear direction potentially?
That's a great question. I like to think, and I'm based only on sort of fairly limited experience, thinking of our own two girls, that there are more pathways. So our oldest, who's about to leave school, is she's going to read English at university. She loves that. She's a great learner and it fills her with excitement. So she's going the traditional path, if you look at it that way. And that's great. And that's there for her in the same way that it always was. Our 15-year-old daughter is entrepreneurial, doesn't love school. She's smart, but she's keen to go and plough her own furrow. She's got her own business going already at the age of 15, selling jewelry, and she's she's making money. And I can see she's already said, I'm not sure university's for me. And I'm pleased that my reaction wasn't one of sort of horror or fear. I've never thought, as she said that, she may change her mind, but we've tried to be very open and think, do you know, I think looking at that shift towards careers that move around, that idea that there's one way of doing it is diminishing. Perhaps not in some, obviously, if you want to go into professional services like law or medicine, there are pathways. I think, and I hope very, very firmly, that for people who don't want to be in that cookie cutter model, that actually the rise of technology and so on means that there are so many paths that you can set up on your own very easily, and you can do something different which doesn't need a particular piece of paper in order to make you credible. I think being out there and getting stuck in and creative and entrepreneurial can be a totally different pathway, and I hope one that is still impressive to people, not because it but still gets you where you want to be. Let's hope so.
Yeah, well, it's exciting. It sounds exciting for her. I mean, the potential of what she could create when she eventually leaves school with her business. It's interesting, actually, because this week's podcast episode that went out yesterday was an American guy who left his corporate career, 20, 30 year corporate career, set up his own company about being financially independent. And so he's very financially savvy and financially motivated to help his kids understand the value of money. And they're young, they're my age kids, they're younger, understand the value of money from a very young age. And he said, to your point with your daughter, his kids have their own businesses, age 10.
Wow.
Which my 12-year-old daughter is now trying to create her art. She's an amazing artist. And she's got her Etsy shop that she's trying to sell her artwork on. And, you know, it might be a few pounds here and there. It's not about making tons of money, but it's about having that entrepreneurial spirit, about understanding how business works generally, which can only help with anything you do, I imagine, the value of money, but about margins and accounting and marketing and all these kind of things. So can you see that in your daughter coming out, that kind of awareness, business awareness?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what she's been able to learn almost just by getting stuck in and doing it, just as you said with your daughter, is immense. That she's had to get her website up and going. She's had to work out how to do marketing and branding on social media, and how to build an audience and have an email list and send marketing emails and take photographs, create content, design a brand identity. And what just struck me as you were talking there is this idea that perhaps the shift we're seeing, my husband always says this, is that whereas in our day, I keep saying that as if I'm...
I know, we sound really old.
Oh, back in the day, you know, a job was something someone gave you. So you went looking and thought, who's got a job I can have? And what I think we're seeing with your daughter and the financial entrepreneur and our daughter is that young people now see that jobs are something they can create, that they can go and think, what do I want to do? How can I make that happen? And I'm not saying it's easy, but that actually there's so much you can do off your own bat. There's so much you can learn and teach yourself to get you started, that it's not that you have to necessarily go through a set of linear steps as somebody says, right, let me show you and let me make this happen for you. You can think, what do I want to make happen? Where do I go to do that? And it's perhaps scary in a way, because there's that, you know, I suppose the flip side of that is sort of the gig economy. You're on your own. You've got to kind of do your, and of course, in certain sectors that's tough, because there's not that level of support and you're not looked after properly as an employee. But when it works, that freedom to go and create your own work,
absolutely.
The rise of the portfolio career and the multi-hyphenate, as we call them, I think is something exciting, provided that we're making sure we're not cutting people loose when they need support and they need proper rights, parental rights and leave and things like that.
Yeah,
I guess it's finding that balance.
That is balance, isn't it? Because I think that is the thing. Is that, well, my first thing that struck me while we were talking is olden days, when we used to live in the olden days, we didn't have Google at university. In fact, I don't think I had a computer. I had a Brother word processor with that little green screen.
Yeah,
tiny little green bar to do all of my dissertations and things on. Ridiculous. So we had no information apart from encyclopedias and, you know, whatever. Whereas nowadays, if you want to create something, you want to start your own business, you want to learn how to do X, Y, Z, you just go online and it's all there. You know, it's literally all there. So we just didn't have the access to the information and the knowledge to, I suppose, build all that up in those olden days. Which my daughter, youngest daughter, did ask me the other day, but she loves horrible histories. Mummy, did you live in the olden days? I said, well, for you, it probably must be like
the olden days. We get all the jokes in our house about, you know, what kind of dinosaur lived next door to you.
I love kids. But to your point on the parental support, as a self-employed business person, again, as we now both are, and having sort of left corporate stability, if you like, there is potentially very little support, actually. And we don't get the benefits of a lot of the sort of, corporate support and medical insurance and all the things that can come with a job. We then have to find that all ourselves, fund it all ourselves. If our kids are sick, then no one else does the work. It's all those kind of things. So I think you're absolutely right. Was creating some new entrepreneur, self-employed business person's support policies. I don't know where, you know, don't know where the stuff starts.
Well, it was so brilliantly demonstrated, wasn't it? The slightly perilous positioning through COVID and furlough and all those, the forgotten people who felt that they totally were not swept up in that because they were self-employed in some way or freelance and didn't sort of have the back contributions that they needed. And so just sort of system says no. And you're right. I think this is the issue, is we're seeing these exciting opportunities for people to go it alone. But the flip side of that is that you don't want to cut people loose, and that how can we support people to be creative and entrepreneurial in a way that doesn't mean that they have to carry so much risk that that they burn out and they have financial pressures that are unmanageable. It's a big question, but one that yes, as we're seeing that change in the way we work, how do we provide people with support that they need to go with it and allow them to generate wealth that the very most successful entrepreneurs do. But the reality is a lot of people who go out on their own are full of passion and enthusiasm, but it's bloody hard work. And if something out of left field floors you, somebody gets poorly, or you need to spend time with your children, then it seems brutal that suddenly you're on your own.
Or you decide that it's not going to work. Now, I've had those moments in the past few years of maybe I should just not bother with all this and go back to marketing because I know what I was doing there and it's stable. But then you stifle people's creativity then. You stifle that passion that you just mentioned. You know, someone wants to build something exciting and new and creative, but then because of all of the sort of constraints, they think, well, sod this. I'm just going back to what I knew.
It's simpler to go back. And perhaps that's why we see the rise of people who do sort of 3 or 4 days in a job where they work as an employee, and then the so-called side hustle. Perhaps that's what we're seeing emerging, isn't it? That people want to give it a go, but they need to at least feel their way first and think, is this sustainable? Can I make it work? So you keep a foot in both camps. But you're right that sometimes then you end up with people working employed in an organization where they're not really happy, but they feel they don't have a choice.
Which is why actually back to the point about enlightened companies. If a company is enlightened, then actually perhaps giving that employee a day a week where they are, you know, pursuing a different, not necessarily academically, but pursuing a different side hustle or passion, or trying to bring something out that maybe would normally be hidden away, that's the way forward for employers to support their employees to start to open doors for them, which aren't the obvious sort of corporate doors, I suppose.
And we've seen those experiments happening with the 4-day week. Not that the extra day is necessarily meant to be used for you developing something else. For some people, it's precious time with family. It's just time for caring responsibility, or just time for themselves to have something a little bit more balanced in their life. But that does provide an opportunity for people to create some space where they can be creative and explore other ideas. But it's that case again that employers, they're either forced through legislation, or they hopefully more become enlightened to see that is precious and valuable to them to allow, in inverted commas, their staff to work in that way. And that requires probably a slower shift and a deeper shift that perhaps, you know, with all its challenges, COVID and remote working and all the changes to the way we work will bring about. But clearly there's still a big tussle going on. I follow the work of Anna Whitehouse, Mother Pucker, who does brilliant stuff on flex appeal and flexible working to give people the chance to, you know, use their time in a way that works for them and works for their employer. But it's a struggle, and watching her campaign, you see she's hitting a lot of barriers and resistance from some quarters. So we're on an interesting pathway, but I fear it will all take time.
It will definitely take time. I think as long as we, something I mentioned yesterday in this debate, as long as we all, I suppose, have a unified voice and don't just leave it, don't just hope that government will sort it out, but actually employers, friends, families, parents, keep this conversation going. Keep supporting people like Anna Whitehouse and Jolie and all these other amazing people doing what's Elliot, all these people doing this amazing work, but keep being part of that conversation, then all I can hope is that unification will drive the change as long as we all speak up together.
And you know, I haven't got time to open this debate, but it was making me think, and one of the important things in that process is have women's voices, you know, in senior positions and new perspective, and you know, people, other sort of diverse views and older people, and you know, that is a whole other can of worms, isn't it? We're getting women into senior leadership and the C-suite and making sure that we're hearing from everybody who's invested in this and has a different perspective to the traditional one of, you know, white old men. I don't want to be dismissive. I've got a lovely dad, but, you know, who've dominated the debate and, of course, have lived a certain way that they see work in one way. And actually, there are lots of different perspectives.
There are. Yes, that perspective is so interesting. So thank you so much, Rachel. It's been a really fascinating conversation. Where's the best place to find you for career coaching or for a perspective, different perspective? Where can people find you?
It's been great fun. I feel we've roamed far and wide. I've had a chance to, you know, sound off. So my website for career coaching, and I work predominantly with women, either returners or career changers, but also people who are looking to step up into leadership positions or make a change. So I'm at rachelschofield.co.uk is my website. I'm on Instagram with the handle at Rework Your Life.
Okay.
Rework Your Life. And I'm on LinkedIn, Rachel Schofield. Yeah. You can find me there as well.
Great. And what's your daughter's jewellery brand? Let's give that a little plug as well.
So thank you. How lovely. Yes, she's Anna Vine Jewellery. She's on TikTok. Jewelry.
Okay.
My married name is Vine, V-I-N-E. So she's on TikTok. She's on Instagram as well.
Oh, TikTok, that scares me. I have no idea what's
going on. Oh, I know. Gosh, that's on my list of things to try and understand, but it blows my mind.
No, I'm still struggling with Instagram, alone TikTok. One thing at a time.
Yeah. As we say, dinosaurs, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. There's no rush. Thank you so much, Rachel. Have a lovely rest of the day. And I'll speak to you very soon.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thanks. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Parent Equation. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review, as every little really does help. You can find me at aishamurray.com or join my Facebook group, The Working Parent Equation, where you'll be part of a great community of like-minded parents, and you're most welcome. Until next time.